Today on the podcast, we're back in Ohio. I'll just summarize. 10-time All-American, indoor track, outdoor track, cross country, American record holder in the steeplechase, Olympic trials finalist, Pan Am medal winner, Hall of Fame. He even has a track meet named after him. Today, welcome on the podcast, Sid Sank. Hi, Sid.
Hi, Matt. Nice to be with you.
Let's start with your origin story as a competitive athlete or runner. How did you get started in sports, competing, running?
Okay, that I can remember, even though it was a long time ago. I started high school, Dayton, Fairview. My freshman year, I was trying to be a basketball player. The freshman basketball coach is also the cross-country coach. He attempted to talk all the freshmen to run cross-country, and I did. I basically did it because he wanted me to and to get in shape for basketball. During that freshman season, I was like 5'8", and a decent basketball player, but not that good. And started running cross-country, and I was good right away. I think I won the freshman city league meet, and I enjoyed it. That's where I was going to end up going instead of being a basketball player.
How did you feel about competition? How did that affect? Did you get to know the other kids in the city?
I don't think so. It was just like a meet. I don't even know how many races we ran. I don't really remember much, except that I know I won the city league meet. Competing wise, I enjoyed competing. I was also a baseball player back then, and I planned on playing baseball in high school, but I ended up going track. So don't remember much else about my freshman year running, and my sophomore year at Dayton Fairview, I ran cross country again. I was 17th in the state meet. And first success, really. Don't remember much else about Fairview Park at all, because we left middle of sophomore year and we went up to Cleveland area. I ran for Fairview Park in Cleveland.
What year was that sophomore year when you got your first state medal?
Graduated in 67. Sophomore year was 64, 65.
Do you remember anything about what it was like? Shoes, your coaches, insights, did the workout seem hard? You were the best runner as a freshman in the whole city. What did you have for facility to run on, shoes? Do you remember any of that?
Dayton Fairview, don't remember much at all. I know we had a cinder track. The shoes, I have no idea. Even Fairview Park ran track sophomore, junior, and senior year at Fairview Park. And once again, it was a cinder track. And actually, the year before, when I transferred to Mill my sophomore year, they didn't even have cross country at Fairview Park.
Right.
My dad told me when he went in and talked to the principal, and we were trying to figure out what school. Of course, I had placed in the state meet in cross country. My dad pretty much made him say they would have cross country from then on. Otherwise, we probably would have went up to another suburb of Cleveland.
No girls teams then, right? Well, your schools?
I think they were intramurals.
How was your self-image, runner, and what you could accomplish? Getting a state medal in your sophomore year, you had these other sports in your background.
Right.
What was your vision? You're changing schools? Were you thinking of what you could accomplish in high school running then?
Probably just a little bit. I'm still so young at it. I just knew I was good at it. I probably, after I got to Fairview Park and started running the track season, I was the best distance runner there too in track, but we had some other decent runners. Junior year, it's when I ran cross country and finished fourth in the state. Enjoyed running cross country because of the team aspect. I really always enjoyed the teamwork. And at that point, I began to probably start to think, well, maybe I can be a state champion in something. And ran the half mile, 2 mile in track. And obviously, if I was going to be a state champion, it would have been a 2 mile.
Were you allowed back then to run the 2 mile and another event in the same meet?
I don't believe so.
You think?
That's a good memory. I think 2 mile, that's the only thing you could run. You could run the mile and a half mile, of course. Our league meet, I ran the mile and a half mile my senior year. So I didn't even run the 2 mile. We had enough other good runners that we had another 2 mile. They either won the 2 mile or finished second. The biggest good memory from high school was my senior year in cross country. And our team has gotten better and better. We weren't supposed to go to the state meet. We barely made it as a team. So that was great. And I did win the regional meet. back then they had, I don't know if it was 4 or 6 races in cross country. You had an individual big school race and a team big school race. And then I don't know if it was just small school or middle, if it had 4 or 6. We ran in the big school team race and I was able to win that. I remember waking up in the morning of the meet thinking all of a sudden I was going to win. It just really came over me. And the guy that I beat in regional was my main competition at state too. His name was Dick Rothke from Cleveland Heights, I think. I was able to beat him in both the meets and beat everybody else. I think my senior year, I lost only one race in cross country. Wes Brock was his name. He was at the St. Joseph Invitational early in the cross country season. He was one of the good riders. That was the one meet I lost. And then in track, same thing, you know, trying to get ready for the state meet. One thing then, and I don't know if it ever changed a whole lot, was I had trouble running in the heat. So senior year, high school, 2 mile, very hot down at Ohio State University. And I just couldn't fight through. I finished 5th, still did okay. But that was disappointing. But that running in the heat bothered me all the way through my running years.
How did you feel? Any reflections on that time that you lost a race? I know it was early in the season, so maybe you didn't expect to be undefeated. How did you handle?
Yeah, I don't remember it being a big deal that I got beat. So I probably was somewhat expected because his name was big and he was probably one of the best the year before. So I don't think it surprised me. Same way in high school as it was in college, if I could stay close to the lead, my kick was good, particularly from far out, which probably in high school was like 300 meters. But I could always outkick people. So I don't know if I was ever in the race with him. Probably the second half of the race, I wasn't close enough to him. But it didn't bother me because, matter of fact, I don't think I even thought I could win the state meet until he got there. And all of a sudden, I'm going, wait a minute, I can win this thing.
But you've had such a long career, and you were a good student. But I want to talk about your decision to go to college and all that. But how easy or hard was school and academics for you? How much work did you have to put in?
It was easy, pretty much. I didn't have to put in a whole lot of in college. I was a math major and education. So math was very easy for me. I studied some, but I don't think I had to study that much. And that was even the same way in college.
Did your family have people who went to college? What was your thinking and how did you decide where to go to college and what was the decision about running?
Okay. Yeah, my dad went to college and I know partway through, probably starting my junior year, I knew I was going to be going to college. And as I got better and better at running, I knew that had to be a part of it. So when it got to be my senior year, I know we were looking. It's funny, Bowling Green was always on my mind. I had a cousin that went here to BG when I was a junior and senior. So I always looked up to it. So my senior year, we had to figure out where. I got recruited fairly hard by a few colleges. I know West Point really wanted me to go, but I would never considered that. So I went to a visit to Bowling Green and Mel Bro was the coach. He's such a good coach, but he recruited me and I pretty much had made up my mind I was going to go to BG. The only other thing that might have happened, the other college that had a great distance program and I considered somewhat was Western Michigan. And I remember we were going on a paid visit to Western Michigan. We left in the car and hit a blizzard, no blizzard, and turned around and came home. And I never visited.
Well, at least it wasn't hot. At least it wasn't hot.
That's right. So I never visited Western, and I don't know if that would have changed if I'd have went. They had a heck of a coach then, George Dales. My guess is I would have still went to Bowling Green.
It's interesting. You're probably the reason that Dave Waddle went to Bowling Green. And these things that change. So a snowstorm may have affected where you went and you being at Bowling Green, it sounds like Dave Waddle changed his mind.
Sure.
I wanted to ask then about the day of the state championship in high school. You said, I could win this. What were you thinking was possible for you as heading into college after talking with Mel Brote?
Okay. At that time, Mel, I'm sure, convinced me that I could be a really good runner in college, but I didn't have any national aspirations at that point. Didn't think I could ever be that good of a runner. And maybe Mel, I think I surprised Mel when I got to BG right away, but then I surprised myself. He may have had somewhat of an idea, a little bit how good I could be, because I didn't train much in high school. I had a coach that I think was a good coach, and he inspired me. But at that point, you didn't run 2-a-days, or we didn't. There were some high school runners that did, but I never ran 2-a-days, and I probably ran 25 miles a week. I remember running in the hallways in high school in the winter. In the high school, I remember roads around school, on the roads. We trained some quality stuff in the winter, even back then, because the another highlight in high school and track, indoors, they had what they called an arena meet downtown Cleveland, and we didn't have a full indoor season. He basically trained me for this meet to try to run on a 11 laps
right.
per mile. It was banked so much you couldn't walk around it. You had to walk around on the bank. So he trained me for it, and I ran the mile at this meet, and I won. And I had to fight like crazy to win. There was a guy by the name of Barry Pierce. He went on to Ohio State, but he ran for Brecksville. Didn't work out all winter because he played basketball, and I still had a hard time beating him. So I remember fighting, but that was a big meet for me. I'm in downtown Cleveland in an indoor facility, and that was a lot of fun.
Let's talk about the details. You're going to Bowling Green. You get a full scholarship. How much did it cost? Where did the athletes live? Were they together? Who was your roommate? What was that transition like as a freshman?
Actually, as a freshman, I did not room with the runner. I had two guys and three of us lived in a small dorm room. We only had 3 or 4 of us come in as freshmen. I believe it was a half a scholarship. I had either room and board paid or tuition. I think it came to $1,500 total. My freshman and sophomore year, I was on the same scholarship. It was like a half a scholarship, and it wasn't that much more. And then starting my junior year, he put me on a full scholarship. I think Dave was the same. I think he started as partial and then ended up on a full junior and senior year. But even then, the college doesn't cost anything like it does now. After my freshman year, of course, after that, I lived with runners the whole time. My sophomore year was Cliff Kotnick, was one of the 3 or 4 distance runners in my class. My junior year, I lived with Waddle.
Somebody else I talked to earlier, Paul Talkington.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Basically, when I came in as a freshman, BG was known more for sprints and actually mile relay, because before I came in, mile relay finished 6th and 7th in the national meet. So Mel had some really good quarter milers. Henry Williams was just a stud. And Tom Wright, who I coached with for a long time at BG, was running. Paul Talkington was the only longer distance runner I remember. He was a big help, obviously, because training with him, he was very good runner in college. He got even better out of college. He ran so good after he got out of college. In cross country, my freshman year, I wasn't eligible. Freshmen were not eligible. Freshman year and also Dave's freshman year, they weren't eligible. I don't remember much about it at all, except running with Paul in workouts. Now, Mel sent us workouts in the summer, and I was crazy enough to try to do them all, which they were a lot. I suppose my mileage was up 50, 60 miles a week, even in the summer, which was way more than I ever used to do. And then when we got there, my memory is 80 to 100 miles a week, early cross country. And for most runners coming out of high school, only trained 25, I don't know most runners could be able to handle that. But for some reason, I adjusted immediately.
And no injuries.
No injuries at all. I got it
that first semester.
No, I got it later on, but not that much. I couldn't run in varsity meets, but they have an open meet early in the season. It's up in Michigan. Western Michigan's there, which was really the outstanding team at that time. So I start the race, and I'm in the middle of the pack, and all of a sudden I just start passing people, and I don't understand. So I get all the way up near the front. I pass Paul. I end up passing a guy, Havilla for Western, who was their number one runner. I finished like 3rd or 4th in the meet. And I'm sure at that time I shocked the heck out of Mel and myself. And I think at that point he began to think, maybe we got something here.
That's great. How did the steeplechase come into your activity?
Freshman year, I'm almost positive. We go to relay meets. Of course, relay meets are, once again, not scored team meets. And then the Kentucky relays, and he put me in the steeple. I wish I could tell you for sure I won. I think I won it. That let maybe 40, 50 schools come to those things. And at that point, I knew that this was going to be my event. Later in the season, after school was out, we had, of course, the varsity had Central Collegiate, had the, they weren't qualifying for nationals back then. I know they had national meets and things like that. He ran me in the Central Collegiate. He was able to do that, even though I couldn't run varsity, and I won it. I think because you got to change speed in the steeplechase, if you're going to run it good, you need to pick it up every time you go into a hurdle and attack the hurdle. I seem to be good at changing speed, and that was just my event. It really worked out well for me.
How did you get hurdle training and the technical part of it?
We would train once a week, and we'd never train on the barriers because they were too dangerous in a practice. We would just use regular hurdles at an intermediate height. I'd say once a week was all we did with that. I think Mel mainly tried to get you to be able to, just by sight, you're running up towards the hurdles, you see when you need to start picking it up, and you just did it by sight. I was a decent hurdler, but not great. Obviously, running the barriers, I never tried to get close down to the barrier. And I did learn not only how to hurdle them, but also how to tap the hurdle if your steps weren't correct.
How long did that take to master?
I don't know. Probably all through college. I think my senior year in college, I was really good at it. And some of the other meets, like junior year in college, I ran very well too. And I didn't have any seasons that I know of where I was undefeated in the steeple. Because we had a guy in the MAC meet, MAC at Western Michigan, named Jerome Liebenberg, who I had a heck of a time beating at times, particularly in the MAC meet. I remember my sophomore year, I finished fourth at the national meet. And that was the first time I had run in a national meet. I came back in the 5,000, I think it was 3 mile back then, and finished eighth. So that really was the first national competition I ran in where I realized, okay,
you're on the big stage.
Yep, I'm ready to go after there. Yep.
The story goes that you had the best freshman time in the steeplechase in the country among collegiates. Does that ring with you true?
No, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
I don't remember me being that. I thought I ran 9 flat. My freshman year, I may have run under 9 at the end. My sophomore year, even then, time-wise, I'm not sure. I didn't keep records like Dave did. We didn't run the steeple every weekend, obviously, either. We never tried to do that.
Well, we'll get back to cross-country and track running. Do you remember meeting Dave Waddle? Did you meet him before his visit to Bowling Green, or what happened?
No, I don't think so. I met him when he came on his visit. I can vaguely remember it. I remember us sitting, eating lunch, me, him, and Mel. And I knew he was obviously a very good runner, but he improved so much in college. It just was unbelievable, too. But I remembered he was somebody we really wanted to get. Now, that time, for instance, my sophomore year in cross country, my first MAC meet, we only had 6 runners go to the meet. Me and Paul were the main two. And I did. I won my sophomore cross country MAC, and he finished 4th. And the 2 freshmen that came in with me finished like 27th and 28th. We had an exchange student running for us with our 5th runner, and he dropped out. The 6th runner became the 5th runner, and he was the guy that Mel talked into running. He was a high hurdler. Just talked him into going to the MAC meet just in case. Luckily, he did. So you can see distance-wise, there wasn't much. With me running good, Mel was really after trying to get some more distance runners. And Dave was the next big one. It wasn't until the year after Dave was here, his freshman year, my sophomore year, where we started getting numbers of good distance runners to come in.
I can tell you what Dave's memory of it is.
Yeah.
A little bit similar to the snowstorm that made sure you didn't go to Western Michigan. He had been accepted. He had gone to the dorm room and bought a rug to go to Mount Union. He said after that lunch, he changed his mind, and he had to call the coach at Mount Union and say, sorry, I'm going to go to Bowling Green. So
right.
It was a momentous, one of those things that happens that changes history and everything.
Yeah, and I think that obviously part of the reason Dave became as good as he did, because he was at Bowling Green and he had Mel, wrote coaching him, and he had the rest of us to run with. And I kind of remember that luncheon. I think Dave told me later that at that point, he decided he wanted to come and compete against me. And I think beat me at that time is what his thoughts were, which showed you how much confidence he had.
Yeah, ambition.
Yeah. And then once he was there, we were both competitive with each other, but it became easier because basically it came to a point where I could not beat him in the mile and a half. He was a middle distance runner. I was a long distance runner. And the steeple wouldn't have been good for him. His legs wouldn't have been able to handle that. But at 3 mile and 6 mile, he wouldn't have been able to beat me.
You mentioned the competitor that you would run into in the steeplechase over the years, where it was maybe a who's going to win today isn't so clear. This is before email and the communications are different. How well did you know these other competitors that you would run into periodically? Did you get to know them? How are those relationships? Without the things of email and Facebook where we can talk to each other all the time, did you get to know those competitors personally?
Yeah, not the other national caliber ones. Jerome Liebenberg being in our conference, I got to know him pretty well, and we had a good rivalry going. The guy Savage was the other one at Oregon. It was one of the good runners. I'd see him at the national meet my junior and senior year. I remember my sophomore year, I won the national meet in a pouring rainstorm, which probably helped me because I loved running in the rain. Liebenberg finished second, and Denny Beham, who was Miami of Ohio runner, finished sixth. So you have three MAC guys finishing. That was my junior year. The next year, my senior year, I won again. And I think Jerome might have been second. Maybe he was third. He was up there. Savage was up there too. But then my senior year at the MAC meet, Jerome beat me. So even though I was running good that year, and that became my very best year in 71, because I went on and won the AAU meet. So I still got beat by Jerome at the MAC meet.
What about the Pan Am Games? Where were they held? What was it like to represent country?
That was up for my senior year, which I wasn't done my senior year because I'd had an injury. So I still had an indoor season coming the next year in 72. But 71 was my big year. That's the year where I won the national meet. And then I went on to the AEUs. I remember being in like fourth place with a lap to go. And once I got rolling, kicking in the steeple, I just was able to attack the hurdles and ran really good. Over the last hurdle, I passed Mike Manley, and I won the AAU meet. That was the summer I went to national. There was a meet out in California against the Russians and somebody else. And then there was a meet in North Carolina against the Africans and Australians, I think. And by the way, that was very hot in the summer in North Carolina, and I didn't do well. And then I got on the Pan American Games. And I loved competing at that level. I ran with Mike Manley in the meet. He won the steeple at the Pan American Games. I came in second.
Where was that meet?
Cali, Colombia. It was an experience. Things like that were great experiences because I had no idea what those countries were like and how they had the barbed wire fences around the stadium and armed guards and stuff to make sure we were safe and meeting some of the other team members. It was just so great. At that point, I figured I was going to continue to do that for years and years to come, to be on national stage.
Do you remember who were some of the big names that were on that team with you that were able to continue their careers?
Oh, yeah. Frank Shorter was on that team. He won the marathon. Kenny Moore, I think, was on that team. Oh, Dave didn't run. I might have been when he was hurt in 71. I don't think Jim Ryan was in that meet. But, Prefontaine, I don't know that he ran the Pan Am Games, but I remember him running in the Russian meet. He's going over to Europe and running more meets over there. And he was really big, of course, on the international stage and on the fight with the AAU at that time with some of the athletes.
Did you get to know him at all? Some people say he's that approachable if you weren't training with him. Did you get to know him?
No, I got to know him a little bit. Some of these national meet, but in 1971, I think I got to know him a little bit. And he was approachable to the point where he was such a good runner and such a headstrong person that it was like a good meeting him, but you knew he was going to beat you, or he planned on beating everybody all the time. But I still liked him. I think Dave got to know him better than I did, being on the Olympic team together. But he was the character. The hardest part in the races for me were the middle of the races, and that's where Prefontaine just really was outstanding. He could run anybody in the ground in the middle of the longer races. I know he tried to do that with Waddle and when they were in that mile. We found out here at BG running with him, and so in the meets, you can't get rid of it. You couldn't get rid of it. Dave would hang on no matter what.
Did you compete with Jerry Lindgren?
I did compete in that trials in 72. He was in the trials, but I didn't hardly compete against him at all. And that was on his down slope, I think. Yeah. He was really good before that, but I read a lot about him and really looked up to him.
We're on the international stage with the international meets, a Pan Am game, success there. By then, certainly you're thinking Olympic trials and onward.
Right.
What was the scope of what you saw could be possible and what we were going to try for?
I knew it was possible and that I should make the Olympic team. And that was my big goal. After that, getting to the Olympics, I don't know that I thought about medals. When I ran 8:26.6 in 1971, the world record was 8:22.6. So I obviously felt I could be national caliber. I don't know in the back of my mind if I thought I could be Olympic gold medalist or anything like that. I don't think that ever entered my mind. I just wanted to get there and see what happened. By the time 72 rolled around, it was just strictly trying to make the team. And I don't think I had any thought I could do much when I got there because the times were a lot faster then. They went under 8:20. Not that I didn't think I could run faster than 8:26.6, but and then my 1972, I started running into some problems. The first mistake I made was I started teaching. I taught junior high that whole year where I, looking back at it, I should have never done that. I just didn't think it would bother me. I think Mel tried to talk me out of it, but when you're just getting out of college and back then there's no money flow coming in, I thought I needed to work. And so I think that affected me. But then in the middle of 72, I started having trouble with sciatica. And even though I could still train and I was in good shape, the trials rolled around. I had struggled that year in the steeple. Part of it was I was sciatic. I don't know if it affected me, but I wasn't hurdling as good. I wasn't able to compete as good. So when we got to the trials in the steeple, I wasn't real confident as I should have been. Still good enough shape probably to do it. And finals in the steeple at the Olympic trials was very hot again, and that didn't help me mentally either.
Apart from Dave Waddle, of course, was there any other teammates? Was your coach Mel Brook there?
Yeah,
at the trials,
he was at the trials definitely, and none of my other teammates. We had some that were good enough. Steve Danforth ran in the national meet. I remember when I finished fourth in the 3 mile my senior year after winning the steeple, he finished eighth. So we had other good runners, but in the Olympic trials, it was just me and Dave. I remember, of course, the first weekend with the steeple and Dave in the 800. I remember both things happening. Me not being able to do well in the steeple, I think finished 10th or 11th, and Dave winning the 800. And I realized before he did that he broke the world record.
Yeah. What happened there? Where were you standing when he crossed the finish line? How did you find him?
I remember being near the finish line, of course. I don't know if I was out on the track, if I was able to be warming up or something, but I remember looking at this board, and I knew at the time what the world record was, and I remember seeing, I mean, oh my God. First of all, 800 wasn't his best event up until then. It was just 1,500 mile. I looked and saw, so somehow I was out on the track or something. I ran up to him and told him. I can remember that, but I don't know how I was on the track. He shouldn't have other athletes being able to be out there, but and it was a path to the finish line, obviously.
There's a photo of you two right after the race.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But the steeplechase disappointment.
Yeah.
How was your psyche and mentality to run the 5,000 meters? Because that was, it was a good race and very close.
Yeah. I think, once again, I don't know if my confidence was that good. I thought probably I had a chance to make the team, but I didn't really feel. So I'm running along in the race. As it turns out, Prefontaine takes off, of course, and I think Young went with him. And I just got in this pack, and I'm running along, and I don't remember much about the race, just being in this pack. And Len Hilton got away from the pack. I find out later that Mel's up in the stand screaming. I can't hear him. He knows that I've got a kick left, and he knows if I get out of that pack that maybe I can run down Len Hilton. But I wait until 300 to go. I just run in the pack, and I take off, and I get away from the pack, and I never got close to Len. I'm guessing 4 or 5 seconds, maybe 6 seconds away from him. So I never even went after him. And that should have been the only thing I should have been thinking of, is trying to make the team and get third. Mel felt like if I had taken off at 600 to go, I probably could have gotten into the range where I could have seen Len would have been close enough that I could have went after him. Now, whether I would have actually beat him, I don't know.
I remember a race in high school once. I think it may have been the 2 mile at the end of three race meet.
Yep.
And running along, and I had a teammate screaming at me from the infield saying, "You are not out of this." And the awareness of that just always isn't there with the people ahead.
It didn't. Len was a miler. He'd moved up to the 3 mile, I think. He's more of a miler. So possibly if I'd have started getting close to him, he would have had another gear and could have outkicked me. But you never know. I'd have had really been rolling and he didn't hear me coming, and I might have been able to pass him, but that's a big if. So I end up fourth. And that definitely was the biggest disappointment of my running career, with not making the Olympic team and then having trouble after that. And I'm not going to be able to tell you much after 72 because it's all a fog to me, and trying to train still and still having trouble with sciatica. And I don't even know if I went to any more AAU championships, but I know I struggled all the way up till 76 trying to get back to the Olympic trials. And I didn't run in the 76 Olympic trials. There's not much I'm going to be able to tell you.
Yeah. You had a great career. I think there's one thing that is a little mixed up. If you look at all the records that have been written about you, you were a 10-time All-American. Does that number make sense to you?
That's correct.
Yeah. The Bowling Green Hall of Fame page says 9.
Yeah.
So I've written to them to try to get that corrected. Do you know why that is?
Yeah. I don't know why it hadn't get corrected everywhere, but you realize back in my running days, and even after my running days, we had a couple other people who are involved with this. The All-Americans were only the first couple in a race, and it was just overall places. In cross country, it was back when my senior year was top 25 runners, but that was it. They did not take into effect foreign athletes. So there was a lot of push at that time to get that corrected, to not track. I finished fourth in the 3 mile, and I was not an All-American. So they must have had only the top 2 or 3. And later, in the next 3 or 4 years after I was out, or coaches in the NCAA corrected it, went back and displaced the foreign athlete and made it. And so and I know in that 3 mile, Gordon Minty, Eastern Michigan runner, was very good, finished right ahead of me in third. So when they removed them from the All-American, they became All-America, I guess. That made me an All-American. So it was after the fact.
That happened to Waddle in cross country too.
Correct.
Yeah, he finished 30th and was moved up to 25th later. Your coach, Mel Brote, seemed to have some role in
that. Oh, he was the big instigator, I'm sure. Yep. He was very much a part of that. And we actually had two other runners, Steve Danforth and Tracy Elliott, that also finished in the low 30s and had become All-Americans afterwards, but weren't declared All-American.
Then Bowling Green is certainly well known in your conference, in running at the national level, with all the success that you and your teammates had. Then, of course, the 800 meters in the Olympics put Bowling Green in the ears of all Americans following the Olympics. It became a well-known university name because of Waddle's accomplishment.
Right.
When did you move out of high school and get back involved? You had a long career at Bowling Green teaching it. I want to find out the track meet, the Sid Singh track meet that happens, the history of that. Uh-huh. And you're inducted, of course, in the Bowling Green Sports Hall of Fame.
Right.
What happened to your personal career after working at that junior high?
I spent 7 years at the junior high. teaching and coaching junior high track and basketball. I loved coaching junior high basketball. It was so fun. But the last 2 years of that, I liked teaching, but I liked coaching so much more. I realized that I didn't want to continue to teach, but I wanted to coach. So the last 2 years at this junior high, I just 10 miles south of Bowling Green, I got the opportunity to coach the women's cross country team at BG. In 78 and 79, I coached women's cross country at BG, still worked at the junior high and coached basketball and track there. Then in 80, Mel Broke retired from track, and Tom Wright, who was his assistant coach, became the track coach, and I got full-time then. They brought me in as full-time assistant track and still the women's cross-country coach. Mel stayed on as cross-country coach till 85. Then I continued to coach the women's cross-country and was assistant men's track. Actually, for 2 years, I think I coached both men's and women's cross-country, and then took over. I actually became the head coach late 80s, head coach in track and cross-country on the men's side.
What was the state of women's cross-country when you entered? How established was that team?
Team was pretty good. It was a decent team. The whole thing at that time was not that organized. AIAW was the national level.
Right.
And at least the first year I coached cross-country, that's all there was, I think. The second year was actually when the NCAA started coming in to the women's side. And that is either my first or second year coaching women's cross-country. They had both national meets. Strange, an AAU national meet and an NCAA meet. Because we had a really good runner. And she was just finishing up, and I got to coach her 1 year. Bethy Ryan was her name, Kevin Ryan. Her husband was a great runner here at BG. And I think the first year I coached, she wasn't on the team because she was pregnant. And then she came back. That was her fourth year of college, by the way. She graduated in 3 years. So she was an unbelievable runner. And she came back the fifth year after being pregnant, after having the baby and everything, and ran for me that year. And she won the MAC meet. And we had a choice of AIAW or NCAA meet to run at for national meet. And I believe we picked the NCAA meet. She ran at the NCAAs. From then on, it was then, and I was coach of the year the first 4 years, 78, 79, 80, 81, and we won the MAC cross country all 4 years. That was because we took it seriously before anybody else did.
Uh-huh. You had the experience at the junior high coaching.
Yeah.
Were you coaching girls there at all?
Not really. The boys basketball and then track, I would coach all the distance runners, girls and boys.
I want to get to the coaching at the university level and coaching there, going to the national meets.
Yes.
What did you learn about the psychology of coaching adult athletes and female athletes?
Basically, everything I learned and everything I did as coaching was from Mel Broach. I tried to just, the way he coached, I tried to do the same thing. Of course, it was a lot different starting at junior high and then starting with the women, but the nice thing about it, when I started with the women for those 4 years and even a couple more after, I was still running enough that I was able to run right with them in all the workouts. When it got to the point in 85 when I started coaching the men, at that point I was already winding down. I was still trying to run some, but I couldn't train with the guys. But at the national level, yeah, that's already thinking national level runners. But I'll be honest, team-wise, was the same way people, I don't know if they can believe it, but same way when Dave and I were running at BG, the team was the most important thing. Cross country and BG would be at the MAC meet, trying to win the MAC meet. That was the most important thing to us. The national thing evolved and became important, obviously, too. That's why I liked cross country so much. I loved running cross country because it was a team sport and everything was not individual. As individuals in track. That it kind of evolved into my coaching, and I tried to coach like him. Never did on the coaching side. It changed from time I ran. We did a lot more mileage, and probably when I was coaching, I didn't try to train the guys as much mileage as we ran in college.
What about scholarships for female athletes?
Okay.
Did that come to level up?
At first, I don't remember that there being any, of course. And then the track started getting into it. And of course, when it got the NCAA, it did level up, I'm sure, pretty quickly to where they had as many scholarships as the men. And to be honest, it's hard at schools like Bowling Green to try to be competitive and throw so much money on the women's side and still be able to maintain the money on the men's side. For instance, we had 8 full scholarships in track, which was the limit. After I graduated, they removed mine, so they were down to 7. And after Dave graduated, they removed his. And so from that point on, they only had 6 full scholarships. Even when the NCAA went to 12, maybe they were 12 then too. I can't remember. BG never had as many scholarships as some of the other MAC schools like Eastern Michigan, Western Michigan. Then after a while, the women's went even higher. And so I know at one point, maybe the end of my coaching career, the women were now up at 18 full scholarships, and BG, I think, did that. And of course, the men were at 6.
Wow.
So it just went completely the other way. And of course, then when they dropped track, that was a very bit disappointing time for me also.
When did that happen?
2002 or 2003. Basically, BG athletic department was losing money, and the university couldn't afford to do what they were trying to do, and they decided they had to drop some sports. With Title IX, they knew they couldn't drop women's sports. They had to drop men's sports. So track, tennis, and swimming got dropped all at the same time from then.
Before you started your coaching career at BG, you were inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Do you remember anything about that? Finding out about it and attending?
I can't remember attending. I knew at that time you had to wait 5 years after you were an athlete. And I knew with my career that I was going to be inducted right away. My career ended up in 72 and 77. I think I was inducted. But that was expected at that point. And it was an honor. It was a great honor, too. I got the Ohio Track and Field Hall of Fame also. That would have been in the late 70s. I was still running a lot then, trying to train. But at that point, as I said, I never was able to get back to the national level where I wanted to be.
What is the story of the Sid Sink track meet?
BG had done that after we were gone, me and Tom Wright and Steve Price. So BG has been good enough to name meets after each one of us because they couldn't name facilities after us. And they couldn't even name facility after Mel, which was a real shame. All they wanted to do was name all the facilities after people who donated lots of money. We were able to get Mel's, the cross-country course is named after him, which should be. I think mine was the first. It's a high school meet they have indoors at the Sink Open. And then Tom Wright got a meet named after him, which is, I think, a college meet. And then Dave got a high school meet named after him.
Have you been able to attend that meet?
Yes, I did. I haven't the last few years, but the first few years, yes. They had a little ceremony. It was a pretty big high school meet here, middle to late February is when they had the meet. And it was an honor. We never had an indoor track until middle of the 90s. When Dave and I ran here, we never had an indoor track. So our training indoors during winter season was pretty tough. Even now, we don't have any outdoor track meets here at BG. They're hoping in a couple of years when we've got a chance to host the MAC again, that they'll be able to upgrade the track, and we don't have any stands, any place to sit for outdoor meets. It's a strange situation.
That sure is.
Yeah.
I went to a little school in Western Pennsylvania called Indiana University of Pennsylvania, IUP.
I know.
The long-term coach there, Ed Fry, he has a basketball arena named after him because of a donation from one of the original YouTube guys, billionaire.
Gotcha.
Chad Hurley made a donation. They wanted to name it after him. And he said, I'll give you the money if you name it after Ed Fry.
No, that's
so
great.
He forced them to pick the newest building arena at that time and name it after
great. Coach. Yeah, Mel passed away in like 2005. Probably one of the hardest things I ever had. I was compliant here at BG at that, and them dropping track with the horrible thing. And I had to be the one to call Mel and tell him. And that was one of the most painful things I ever had to do. He had cancer at that time, and he only lived a couple more years, and he was struggling. And here I had to tell him that. I'm sure affected him big time because it was a big part of his life coaching here.
Sure. There's a famous picture of you and Dave Waddle at the Olympic trials that somebody just did a recreation of. Do you know the porch picture?
Yeah. Oh, I know. And the two guys now had a porch picture done. Similar, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did see that. That was neat. Probably we didn't even have Nike. I mean, we might have gotten Nikes during the Olympic trials. I think we were Adidas in college, both Dave and I think, and that's when Nike getting us in that picture on that porch. I don't even know how it happened. It was neat, though. I remember Nike having a room full of shoes and us getting a lot of shoes because of our success. But back then, it was a lot different than it is now, of course, with sponsorships and how much money some of these athletes can get.
Was it ever a concern of yours with your athletes, with performance-enhancing drugs, with sponsorship, with under-the-table payments? Was that something you had to monitor, be concerned about? Did you have to discuss that with the athletes you coach?
No, not very much. I don't think that was a big concern. Maybe discussed it a little bit. And of course, when I was compliance director, I discussed it with all the teams. But we had still some national caliber athletes here, and they ran places at national meets and stuff. I still don't think that was going on as much. I stopped coaching in 98. My biggest athlete that I coached, his name was Todd Black, in the 90s. And Olympic trials in a row, he was a half miler. And I went to the meets with him. The first one was in New Orleans with the Olympic trials. He finished ninth in the 800, so did not make the finals. He ran great in the heat, by the way, so that was a great meet for him. And 4 years later, he finished eighth in the 800. He made the finals. He ran 146 three or four times in a row at that trial. I think he had three preliminary rounds, and then in the final, he ran 146 again, but that wasn't good enough. So he's at that level, but I don't ever remember sitting down talking to him about getting money under the table for any reason. I don't know that it went on that much at that point even.
You saw the unfortunate end track and field there at BG. What about other changes in the sport that happened during your coaching career? You mentioned the change with Title IX. Other changes? Did your coaching approach, the mileage, equipment, stand out as changes that happened during your career?
That was a slow process of changing. I got to the point where I realized I couldn't train them as hard as we trained. And Mel, we just did, some of us did so well under his training, but there were a heck of a lot of athletes that didn't make it with his training. I mean, got injured and couldn't make it through it. But for national caliber athletes, it was great. By the time I'd have marginal national caliber athletes, maybe I'm training in the 90s, the Todd Black being one, definitely was. But at that point, didn't feel like I could train them as hard. We didn't run as much mileage. We probably 70 miles a week with the longer distance guys. Still ran two a day, maybe not quite as much. The other thing we did with Mel, Dave and I and the guys that we had, that group into the early 70s, we trained hard, like three times a week. My remember is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Tuesday. Really?
Yeah, I'm not kidding. Monday was really hard, distant strength type work. And Wednesday was probably more like pace work or sprint work or something. But we trained on the track all 3 days. Thursday, we'd back off some. Friday, of course, was easy. And we also raced a lot. That was the other change. I continued to try to race my athlete a fair amount when I was a coach. I'd go to a track meet and run two or three races. That was part of our training, I think, was our races. Nowadays, in cross country, most of these teams only run like five or six races a year in cross, where we ran every weekend. Same thing in track, starting indoor all the way through outdoor every weekend. That just doesn't happen anymore. We tried to do that when I was still coaching. Tom Wright coached with me. He was the sprint coach. We'd take them to the big meets like the Penn Relays, Drake Relays. We'd try to go around to some of these big meets. Man, we still developed some really good two-mile relay teams and mile relay teams. But the training changed, and I think, I don't know if I can't say the caliber of athletes that I worked with was still good and still very good. But if I'd have been training people like Dave Waddle, if you get an athlete like that, Todd Black, for being a half mile, he should have been a 1500 meter runner, and I just never got him to be able to run that good, but I trained him like a 1500 meter runner. He trained the mileage and he trained cross country, ran every cross country season. So the training did change. I don't know, competing wise, we still had a lot of fun and a lot of good times competing in national caliber meet.
Talking with Dave Waddle, he values his friendship with you and certainly with your disappointment at the Olympic trials, you had a different outlook for the 1972 Olympics. What do you remember about watching those and seeing your teammate and other people of your friends have great success?
Yeah, it was both ways. It was bothering me. I mean, I was jealous a little bit, but I was rooting for Dave, of course, and we didn't have any idea at that time he was going to win the gold medal, especially the 800. I'm watching the meet, and of course, the steeple was in the first weekend, and I watched that and wishing I'd have been there. But somehow, the morning of Dave's final in the 800, before it was on TV here, I heard about the result. I knew going into it, watching it, that he'd won. Although, as the race developed, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, just check. Is that news report right?
Yeah, I know. You're looking
at 600 meters.
He was so far behind. Yes. By the middle of the backstretch, I began to see, okay, he's going to be in it. But still, to win it was expecting a lot. But I was thrilled that he won. I was excited. First half of that summer, I'm hoping that maybe I'll still get to go. Because you can have something happen, and I'm the alternate in the 3 mile. George Young had qualified in both the steeple and the 3 mile. So I'm hoping maybe he runs the steeple and decides not to run the 3 mile.
Yeah. Did the clock just run out, or did you get a notification?
Clock just ran out. And to be honest, by the time it got close to the Olympic, I was not in great shape. I kept training, trying to be ready for it. But it got more disappointing. I think I got more and more out of shape to the point where if I'd all of a sudden in the last week before the Olympics got to go, I don't think I'd have done real well.
Yeah. So it would have been nice to be there.
Oh, it would have been great. I wish I could have been there. Yeah. And of course, Mel was there with Waddle, and I think that was a thrill. Mel would have loved to have me there. I think that was a big, major disappointment to him. Just the fact that if I'd have been there, even if I wouldn't have done much, it wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah, that was a significant physical thing that happened to you. And of course, in other cases, the way Olympic trials work, it can just be on the day, something can happen. Jim Ryan in those Olympics in the 1500 was tripped.
Yep, right.
And you were able then later to run with the teams. Did that sciatica resolve 100% as far as you were concerned?
Not really. And as I said, to finish fourth in the Olympic trials, it obviously didn't keep me from training. I was obviously able to still train hard and still be in darn good shape, but it affected the steeplechase the most, I think. With some reason, I just couldn't relax and couldn't get fluid enough to be able to run that event like I should have.
Which one was shorter, your lead leg or your trail leg?
Lead leg. My right leg is just shorter. So I've worn orthotics ever since they found that out, which helped correct the thumb, but I don't understand. I still seemed like I should have been able to run the steeplechase better that year. I think going into the finals, I still thought I had a chance. My confidence level wasn't there. And as I said, when the announcer said it was 100 degrees on the track, as we were lined up on the starting line, he said, 100 degrees down on the track. I'm going, oh, crap. That affected me mentally some. I mean, it's not that I couldn't run well in the heat. It did bother me.
Well, you had a great career, of course, all throughout this. It's great to talk with you and hear these stories. It's great successes. Do you have any falls in the steeplechase in meets?
Surprising, because I ran a lot of steeples. If you put my sophomore, junior, and senior year, and then 72, never fell. The only effect, and this is kind of strange, my sophomore year at the national meet, the running, I hit my heel on the barrier, on the corner of the barrier, and almost fell. And I remember continuing to run, not bothering me at all. And that's when I finished fourth. So I don't think it affected that race at all. But then the week after, my heel was just killing me. And I had to not run at all for a month or a month and a half that next summer, which was unusual. Yeah. That's the closest I ever came on the steeple barrier. I never coast hurdled the the water jump like some do. Basically, most of the race, I only had one shoe, 1 foot wet. So I'd go slosh, slosh. Later in the race, I think sometimes I get the second foot wet. But the summary of that, I never did fall. And nice, something that could easily happen, especially when you're running fast. I always had a kick left and seemed to have something left in it, though. Because if you'd get in a steeple and you'd run too hard, and you get to the end and you're just exhausted, you're going to have trouble getting over the barriers. I never had that happen to me. I did have maybe the last lap and a couple of the races I had tapped the hurdle because I was tired. But you'd take your lead leg, and instead of leading it over, you'd jump, tap it on top of it real quick, and you wouldn't lose your momentum. The key in the steeple is don't lose momentum after you jump the hurdle. That's easy to do. If you're lunging, if you're reaching when you get to the hurdle, and you're landing with your back, you lose your momentum, and you have to get going again. The key is to pick it up into the hurdle, get over the hurdle, going faster, and roll right into the next part.
Right. It's great talking to you.
I agree. Looking back, I did have a great career, and I wouldn't have traded it for anything. Even with the disappointment, we still have kind of a reunion every year where it's only a few of us get back together and play some golf. Those things just mean so much to me and are so enjoyable. Waddle and I get together with Bob McComber and Steve Danforth. They live in the area here. Bob's another one that had a heck of a lot of success after college. Oh, I know what I want to tell you. Cross country. My freshman year, of course, we didn't go. Sophomore year, we went to the Nationals. We didn't have a team. It was just me and Paul. So starting my junior year at national meet, we finished 9th. My senior year, we finished 8th, and that was without Waddle because he was hurt.
That was the year he missed.
Yeah. After I was done, Dave's senior year, we finished 7th. And after Dave was done, they finished 6th.
Wow.
So there's a heck of a lot.
That's a good 4-year run.
I know. A lot of good runners coming through here. And by the way, his injury and my injury, I didn't run an indoor season, happened basically on the same cross-country course. Uh-huh. Ohio U had a course that was ridiculous. It was so hilly, and you had to make turns after you came down off a hill. My junior year at the All-Ohio, that we ran that course because we wanted to run it because we knew next year we were going to have to run it at the MAC meet, and I got hurt. And I finished the season because of our training being so solid. I was able to go right on through and run, win the MAC meet and go on and do well at Nationals. And got 8th or 9th. The senior year comes along, we run that same course at the MAC meet, and Dave gets hurt. And Dave never finishes the race, and his season is over, and he misses indoor track. And it was just a shame, number one, that we had to run that course. And it was a shame we both got hurt. Although I came back in 72 and ran indoors, and that's where we finished 2nd in the NCAA at the indoor meet. Waddle run the 800, I won the 2-mile, and we won the distance medley with Dave and I. Finished with 18 points, and USC won the meet with 19. We'd have never had that if I wouldn't have been injured a year.
Something I talked with Dave about. He didn't run 2-a-days when he first got there his freshman year.
No.
What did you think about Waddle and him sleeping in?
I don't remember feeling upset about it or something towards him his freshman year because I think that was the type of athlete he was. He wasn't a long-distance runner. He was trying to do what he could. But if it would have continued through the rest of the college year, and maybe he didn't run all the time, but he ran most of the time in the morning, and I think he realized how important it was. And by the time I became captain my junior and senior year, I would have been all over him if he wasn't doing it enough. I was the type of captain that went after people if they didn't train like they should. Track practices and even cross-country practices, they were so hard. And we had so many good runners by the time my junior and senior year that we would be pushing each other, and I don't think I had to say much. That was effective for Dave and I, because anytime we'd have short, like quarter-mile repeat, 200 repeat, I would just be hanging on, and Dave would be rolling. Distance workouts, like one of our famous distance workouts, was 3 2-mile repeat. And this was about 2 or 3 weeks before the MAC meet. Mel always did it on a Monday, and I loved it. I loved the workout. You had to run 10 flat the first 2 mile, 9:40 the second, and try to run 9:20 the third. And there were a number of us that could do all three of those, but I love that workout. Of course, Dave would just be hanging on. Now, would he keep up? And oh yeah, he'd keep up, but he'd be hanging on. He'd be dead tired at the end of the workout. But I think the combination of that, us helping each other in the different workouts, was a big thing.
Yeah.
The other thing I'll mention, one time we raced each other in the middle. Okay. 2 mile. It was either a dual meet or a triangular meet on our track. And Mel decided he wanted us to both run it. And he wanted us to compete. That's the only time we really competed against each other at a distance like that. I had to lead the race, of course. There's no way Dave's going to lead it. We had a couple of other good runners. And so we get the last lap on the back straightaway. One of the other runners passes both Dave and I, Steve Danforth, and start getting in first. And I'm going, oh my gosh, no way am I going to let him beat me. So we get on the final turn. Dave would never pass you until the final straightaway. And you can't, like I said before, you couldn't get rid of him. He'd hang on. So starting this straightaway, I was able to pass Steve. And of course, Waddle blew by me and beat me in the 2 mile. But I think he even glanced over his shoulder at me and I felt like punching him. But it was just a competitive thing, fun. We still had fun with it. But basically, competing against each other seriously. In cross country, I was always ahead of him. He wasn't that far behind me, but the longer distance races, he didn't run 3 miles and 6 miles in track anyway, or steeples. So we wouldn't have an opportunity to have to compete against each other seriously. But we had fun with it. And Dave, I don't know if he mentioned to you, I think in the last 2 years, junior and senior year in college, he only lost one race in track.
Yeah.
And that was when he was sick. And the Monday after that race, the guys started kidding him about it, and he almost took their heads off. You learned at that point, you don't kid Dave about losing. But it just didn't happen. But he was not happy about it, of course. But running with him and watching him race, you just got to the point where you knew, you just didn't expect him ever to lose.
By sick, it started 1975-76, you were still coaching. So you're a fan of the sports. Do you remember Prefontaine's death and finding out about that?
Very much so. Yeah, that was a big shock. He at the time, and even for years after that, were the reason why distance running in the United States got as good as it did.
It was training for the 76 trials, so 75 is when he had his okay. crash.
Yeah, that was after a meet, right, in Oregon.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as I said, I'm sure Dave knew him better than I did, but I knew him enough that I wouldn't mind running pre in the steeple.
Oh, yeah.
When I was at my best, I wouldn't mind trying to beat him in the steeple. That would have been a possibility. Even though I was a national caliber runner, I just never thought it possible to beat pre in a race.
It's a great time to have gone through.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time, Sid. It's been great to get to know you a little bit and hear all these stories.
Okay, Matt, thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed another episode of Running in the 70s. Voices, stories, and memories of athletes who were running in the 70s. Until next time, wherever you are, keep looking forward and don't forget to look back.